to the dulcet tones of Fractal Zoom. It's that time of the week again. It's Monday afternoon, believe it or not, 1 to 2pm. Here is the Zentech Radio Show on your community radio station, KVMR-FM in Nevada City. It's 1 or 2 in the afternoon, 70 beautiful degrees on the outside of our studio. We'll be here through 2 o'clock. We'll be talking about technology and we'll be answering your questions. Studio guest today in the station is Roger Thornburn from the Gold Country Computer Learning Center to answer your questions and talk a little bit about his take on technology. As usual, for the Zentech Radio Show, which is a show that goes on every 14 days, your hosts in the studio today are myself, Paul Castro, and my best buddy over there,
Glenn Farr. Good afternoon, folks. How are you today?
And there's also Mr. Roger Thornburn. How are you doing, Roger?
Hi, glad to be on the program with you guys.
Fading down on our regular intro music there, Fractal Zoom. We are also transmitting to you in the Truckee area on translator K286AN at 105.1 FM. And you are welcome to call us probably about quarter after or 20 after the hour when we've had a little talk with Roger here. Our numbers in the studio, Studio 49 here at 401 Spring Street, are 265-9555 or out of area, such as in the Truckee Basin, at 1-800-355-5867.
And we'd also like to thank for helping to underwrite this upcoming hour of programming here at KVMR, OhmSoft Technologies, providing local internet solutions for home and office from Sacramento to Truckee, including DSL, dial-up access, domain name registration, secure transaction services, and technical support. 530-758-0119 or OhmSoft.com. OhmSoft, the enlightened internet solution.
We've got quite a few things to talk about today. Many new things have turned up since our last show here. Roger will be giving his take on it. It's always nice to get another person's point of view. There's a new version of AVG out. Some people, not me, but some people have tried Internet Explorer 7, which is still in beta. Glenn's sticking his tongue out, so we'll have some take on that. There's some new anti-spyware, which used to be called Awido, that we recommended, that was bought by the company AVG that makes the free antivirus. So now they call it AVG anti-spyware. We'll be talking a little bit about that. And there's other knickknacks and paddywhacks along the way. So we would like, first of all, to welcome to the studio Roger Thornburn, having stolen you from Mel's show, right? Listeners can normally hear you. Tell them a bit about that. They've heard you before.
Well, yes. Mel asked me to come and talk on her show because she basically is appealing to the over 50s, which, you know, I have to confess to being a member of.
Me too. And me.
Well, look, we all listen to Mel's show. And our computer learning center is very focused on helping people over 50, you know, getting to computers for the first time. And so Mel was, you know, really quite excited to have me talk to some of her listeners about that opportunity.
You've got a regular spot on her show, is that right?
Well, no, it feels like it, but...
So tell us when Mel's show is, so they could perhaps catch you then.
Mel's show is on a Wednesday at the same time as Zentech. The 1 to 2 hour time slot is when Mel is on a Wednesday.
So you do little spots. The difference today is going to be that after Roger's talked a bit about his favorite subjects with computers, you will be able to ask him questions. Explain a bit about who you are and where you are, Roger.
Yes, we're the Gold Country Computer Learning Center, and basically a part of the local community center, which is housed at the Nevada County Fairgrounds. And we run classes essentially aimed at, as I said, over 50s, though it isn't, you know, mandatory that you're over 50. It's just that our classes are very focused on helping people, first-time users of computers and technology like that, you know, get to grips with it. And so we have classes that range from, you know, really basic introduction, learning how to use the mouse and, you know, a keyboard and so on, right the way through to some quite advanced photography classes, you know, where people can learn to, you know, cut out, you know somebody's head from one photograph and paste it onto somebody's body on another, you know, because, you know, they want to do that.
It usually involves ex-in-laws, I understand.
Actually, it's my kids. Every time I take photographs of my kids as a group, one of them always spoils it, so I always have to cut one head and pop it on another.
So the website you've got, and I was very, very impressed with some very nice systematic tutorials. I can't often afford to be systematic and go step by step by step about optimizing your PC. Mm-hmm. The basic website for the whole center is GC, Gold Country Computer Learning Center, gcclc.org. It is out on the Zentech website, or you can go straight there. Our usual site for this show is zen.kvmr.org. You can go there and follow links to Roger's site, or go to gcclc.org and see some great tutorials. What else is out there on the website?
Well, I'm webmaster as well as instructor and general gopher around there. And the website has everything about our organization. So it has the class schedules, it has the requirements to become a student, it has all of the description of all of the classes, it has a calendar to show you what's going on, it has the ability to sign up for our lab time online. So there's a whole bunch of things on there. We also have a completely separate section for our volunteers, which is not so much interest to your listeners, but we do have this section for volunteers where they can actually download all of our manuals and get an up-to-date list of all our volunteers and so on. So it's a pretty comprehensive website.
Is it a non-profit, or is it granted, or how does that work?
Actually, it's a complete it's under the umbrella of the Community Centre non-profit. But the whole organisation is manned by volunteers. So we have some really good, great volunteers. I have to say, some of the instructors are just great. I'm actually quite knowledgeable about the computers. My patience is a little, sometimes. And so, people like my wife are just superb. They work with these people and have lots of patience. So I tend to teach the more advanced classes rather than the beginning classes. But we do have this great range of skills in all the volunteers that can help you get very, very comfortable with the technology, and actually end up really wowing your grandkids, which is your whole objective.
I understand that when I visited you, Roger, and I was very impressed with what you've got down there, you having gone over to Staples and got some of their computers from there, I was very impressed with the fact that the minimum requirement isn't even a computer.
That is true. We don't specify that you can have a computer because, quite frankly, a lot of people, I'm not sure whether they want to take to it, and it's a big investment.
So it's a good way to get in the door to see if it suits you.
Absolutely, and because we're all volunteer, our costs are minimal, and so the cost of the classes is also very low. Mm-hmm. So a four-week basic introduction class will only cost you $30.
Good. We'll mention at the end of the show and also on our website where to find Roger. And a lot of people, I think, go to the library and go surfing at the library if they haven't got their own computer. So you can at least make a start by visiting Roger's site. Or if you have no computer at all and no internet skill, and there are still people out there like that, you have a good old phone, right?
We do.
Okay, what's that?
Well, it's the same as the one you just gave out just now, which is 273-4961. Let me do that one again. 273-4961.
We will give that out a little bit later on in the show. After we field some questions, you've described some of the things you do and what happens.
Well, the only part that I wanted to complete on was that once a month we also have a user group meeting and we do seminars. Mm-hmm. And the material you're talking about cleaning your computer, for instance, which is one of the seminars that I wrote and give regularly, is available for download as well, the handout material from the website. And it's a very methodical methodology for cleaning your computer up, because we find that's one of the biggest problems that some of our students have, is keeping their computers clean.
I don't know why you say some of your students. I think it's one of the biggest problems everyone's got, whether they know it or not.
Yes. And I was going to say, maybe down a little bit on mine, I'm sorry. The cleaning the computers is so important. I was working on a computer here in the station recently, and it hadn't been open for 2.5 years, and just full of dust mites, and not dust mites, but little dust balls and stuff like that. So that is really important. I know Paul and I have
absolutely
seen computers with the heat sink all clogged up,
right,
and then that fries the either the fan goes bad or the CPU gets fried.
Right.
So very important. I want to ask, I haven't looked at your download here, but are you a proponent of blowing the dust out or vacuuming it out?
shaking it.
Well, the reason that big sigh there is that I have a very knowledgeable colleague who does a complimentary presentation as well about the physical cleaning of your computer.
Oh, okay. And you're talking about the other cleaning. I'm sorry.
No. Mine's the methodical cleaning of the hard drive and all of the files and so on.
Boy, did I go in the wrong direction.
He talked exactly about that, because it is important. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. The physical cleaning of the computer. And he maintains that you have to use one of these dust cans. I happen to actually use my compressed air line at home. I have to say, I hold the fan still with one finger and I blow it the other through, and I've never had a problem, and it cleans it beautifully.
Did you say you hold the blades of the fan still so it doesn't drive the fan?
Yes,
otherwise it'll wreck the battery.
Otherwise it goes
Oh, I like that.
Zing.
You only get to do it once, though.
Paul, could you turn Roger's mic off for just a second? I'm going to reposition it, because that way,
okay,
sort of, when you're looking my direction and Paul's direction, we get you. Okay, go ahead and bring it back up.
That's better. How are you doing, Roger?
I'm doing great.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So then the actual cleaning of your hard drive or your system, can you give us a little 1 or 2 minute tutorial on that?
Well, yeah, the seminar, and by the way, a little plug, the seminar is being run again a week from this Wednesday. So Wednesday the 15th of November, you can all come down at 1 o'clock to the...
You sure you mean that, Roger? All?
Well, you know... We charge $10 for this, so we squeeze as many as we can in.
Okay.
What we do, what I go through is essentially, how to check the disk for errors, how to clean out all of the unnecessary temporary files that got accumulated, how to clean out the internet files, how to clean out your cookies, how to defrag the hard drive. And so, by the time you go through all of this, the most difficult one is cleaning out the startup items, the ones that start up without your knowledge, because people obviously are a little nervous about, unchecking those. And so I show them how to check them out. And by the time we finished, I guarantee that their computer will run significantly faster than it did when they started.
Now, I don't know if you can see my computer here, Roger, but one of the things, in my little startup, I've got several things, and actually I need to take this Acrobat Speed launcher out, a power menu I don't need in there. By the way, the caller who called in and said that the cap unlocks for laptops, remember how you'd accidentally push it?
Yes.
And I downloaded this little caps unlock program. It doesn't work.
And mine does.
Oh.
Same one? I don't know. I got it from... Langerlist.
Okay. Maybe we can talk about that in a little bit. Anyway, this one doesn't. And I was trying to figure out, I can't find it in my program list under Add and Remove Programs. And I just see that it is launching here with Startup. But very often, you'll look in the Startup menu under Start Programs, Startup, and there's nothing there. But yet you've got 9 or 10 different items that are starting up.
Right.
So that's where you go into the detail of how to get to those.
Yes. Microsoft has a wonderful little utility called MS Config, which shows you everything that is brought up either through the startup menu or through the registry, and that's the one that that we use. What's really nice about it is that it doesn't actually delete anything. It just stops it loading, and if you find that you need it, you can go back and check it back again, and it goes back to as it was.
Okay. Another way to get there is Spybot Search and Destroy. I think, Paul, you've shown us how to use that in the past.
What happens is that Windows launches items in startup from, to my knowledge, about 11 different places. And if you have a good utility, it'll allow you to see all the started up places, no matter how they got going. And in my case, I use Spybot Search and Destroy, Advanced Tools, Startup Items.
Can I ask, Glenn, on the Spybot one, does it temporarily disable them, or does it remove them?
It's not uninstalling the program, it's removing the startup entry that would have launched it. Now, the question a lot of people have got...
But how do you put it back again if you want it?
Recheck it.
Oh, it's the same as config.
Okay. Yeah, but they're all in one place. Maybe I've got a disposition against Microsoft. In fact, I'm sure I have. The question's going to be, and you're going to be asked this as well, Roger, how do you know what to turn off? And the answer I usually give is, well, if you turn it off and it doesn't break, it's okay.
Well, what I show is... First of all, I absolutely subscribe to that philosophy. I uncheck everything first and then see what happens, right. And I just noticed Glenn had like 8 items just in his startup folder.
Right.
If I have more than 3 total startup items...
Makes you nervous.
I'm nervous, right.
Right, so it's either uncheck things one at a time or uncheck everything and then turn on the things to make them work.
But the place I tell people to visit is a website called www.sysinfo.org. SYSINFO.org, and that has the list, and they update it every day of all known startup items, and it tells you what it's for, whether it's needed, whether it's a user thing choice one, or whether it's completely unnecessary.
And a lot of times the name of the program being started is not helpful. It doesn't represent what it is at all, right?
That is true. And the other bigger concern is that many spyware programs will put themselves in with a very similar name and but a different executable. And so you need to look at both parts of the startup item, both what it's called and the program it's calling, to make sure that that corresponds to the entry in the sysinfo database.
Right, because nobody's going to call their spyware spyware.exe.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Sysinfo. Sysinfo.org.
Yes, it's superb. Excellent website.
Good. Where should we go from here? Let's start fielding calls. It is 12:21 in the afternoon. We have in the studio on Zentech our guest from my country, Roger Thornburn. You're not a guest. You live here like I do, but a guest in the studio 49 here. Glenn Farr is also here, and Paul Castor, and we'll be here through 2 o'clock. And you can call us at 265-9555, 1-800-355-5867. We've also got an email address, which we may or may not be picking up right now, but we certainly respond later, and that's zen@kvmr.org. And the reason we have the Zen component in there is because there is something esoteric and artistic about this technology. I'm not always sure what it is, but it's out there. Are you ready to click calls on there, Glenn, or shall I do it?
Oh, you know what? Do we have any? I'm sorry. I didn't even start that up. Let me go there just a moment.
Now, Glenn automates this. We actually run our phone patch on a laptop, which Glenn's got on his side because he's got his act so much better together than I do.
And with that, we have our caller live on the air. Welcome.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, I have a laptop. It's a compact. I don't know if that's for stereo. And recently, as of about the last month or two, I've not been able to download attachments. It won't open attachments. It won't allow me to open them up and download them. And it just happened overnight. Can you tell me why that might be?
What program are you using to check your email?
I'm on Yahoo.
Yahoo, interesting. So you go to mail.yahoo.com and you get the typical blue and white page.
My email address is at Yahoo, and I use Express, or not Express.
Outlook
what
Express.
Do I use?
Outlook Express.
Outlook Express.
Okay,
yeah.
So you must be an SBC customer.
No.
No? Interesting. Because I wasn't aware that Yahoo could work in Outlook Express. Oh, it can. Okay.
Do you pay $19 a year for this?
Yes.
No, it's the free email address.
Okay.
Something interesting going on with that then.
Yeah. Do you also use a desktop computer? Or is the laptop your main computer?
The laptop's my main.
It is out, let's jump the question a little bit and not figure out how this happened with Yahoo, but I think Roger and I are looking at each other because if you use the program Outlook Express, there's a setting in there to not show you attachments. So it used to do it, and Microsoft sent down a security update that turned it off, and you have to turn it back on again. Roger, can you remember where... I don't use this program, so I've forgotten how to do
it. I'm going to open up Outlook Express right now, and I'll go take a look.
Okay, you go to Outlook Express, and then you go to the Tools and Options.
Tools, Options.
Right, and in the Tools, Options, there's a whole bunch of tabs across the top that you can click on. One of them is called Security. And at that point, my memory is going, what are all of the check marks under that security tab? And you'll need to look down, and it'll be obvious. There'll be something that says block attachments that might contain a virus, I think it's called, and you have to uncheck that.
Oh.
Do you see that now? Are you trying that now?
Do you have the computer in front of you? Are you trying it?
Oh, no, I don't. I'm actually pulled over the side of the road.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
I'm trying to go there now, and for some reason, as typical with any Microsoft thing, I can't even click Tools or Message. Right, it's there, but it's not letting me click anything.
Right, and this is one of those situations where it used to work and doesn't now because an update got sent down that stopped it. So that's the correct place there.
Here we go. So we go Tools, Options, and then click on the tab that says Security. And can you see that okay, Roger? Download Images. It says Block Images. Do not allow attachments to be saved or opened that could potentially be a virus. And so that doesn't allow any attachment to
no
be saved
what.
Or opened, no matter what.
Yeah.
So, and I'll put some show notes on that. What's your name?
Cass.
Okay, Cass, if you'll check at zen.kvmr.org a little bit later today, there'll be some show notes up on how to get there.
That'll be for today's show.
Yeah.
And that's zen@kvmr.org.
That's our email address with the @. If you put zen.kvmr.org, that's our website.
Oh, got it. Great. And then I just downloaded some AVG security as a temporary to see the. I think it's AVG. Security. How do you guys feel about that? Is that a pretty good one? Or
that's exactly what we recommend. It's free.
Oh, okay.
When did you download it?
Oh, just the other day. Actually, I didn't. My husband did, because I don't know how to do things like that. But, yeah, just the other day.
The reason I'm asking is that in the last 2 days, AVG, or the company that actually makes this product, is called Grisoft, and their website is grisoft.com, grisoft.com. They make the AVG software, and in the last 2 days, they've just issued a new freeware version called 7.5.
Okay.
So when you install it, have a look to see whether it's the version 7.5, and if it is, you're fully up to date. If not, you need to go back to the website and download the new version.
Okay.
And for those people listening that use Grisoft's AVG software, which I know the gentlemen here both recommend it, and we do at the community center recommend it as well. It's a very nice piece of software. When you download the new version, and if you download it to your desktop and then double-click on it, a box will come up and it says, do you want to uninstall or repair? And you go, you know, I actually wanted to upgrade, and it's not doesn't give me that option. So what you need to do is to just put the radio button into repair and then click the next button, and it will upgrade your old version to the new version fully automatically.
Okay, God. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Cass. We appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And we have another caller, I believe, Glenn, and they are going to be live on Zentech any moment now.
They are going to be, and we'll go there right now with our little next button.
Go right ahead, caller. You're live on the
Let's
air.
See, we didn't quite get them. There we go. Hi, caller. You're live on the air now.
Hi. I'm a Mac person.
Okay.
And also a graphics and photographic retouching. So a CRT monitor has been real important to me because of the color accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
Have they made any LCDs out there yet that give color accuracy and don't diminish from the center to the edges in their brightness?
If you bought an Apple monitor and it was of the species known as digital, my bet is that it's very highly accurate. And there's certainly no diminution towards the side of the screens the way you get a CRT.
The CRTs, it's the LCDs that diminish from the center to the side.
Do they?
Oh, yeah, by 25%.
I've never noticed that.
And you can't get color accuracy on an LCD.
When you say color accuracy, have you calibrated with Pantone's calibrator?
Well, the problem is that's going to add a lot of time to every job I do.
Oh,
and
I calibrate mine once a month, and it never moves. I mean, it's it takes... takes 5 to 10 minutes to do the calibration, and I think it does a superb job.
So the calibration is not per job, it's for the machine.
No, I realize that, but the LCD technology too is such that some LCD screens, depending on what kind of screen and what kind of technology it uses, are better than others. Do you know what that might be for color accuracy?
I would guess that if it's a monitor made by Apple, which is something that could cost you upwards of $1,500, it's going to be pretty good. And I'm not saying that based on price. It's the fact that Apple will integrate things in such a way that you can make a fair bet.
Okay.
They're designed to work together. And most Apple LCD monitors made now are of the digital species, so they don't involve analog drift and who knows what. Mm-hmm. What comes out on the screen is exactly what came off the video card.
Yeah, but then with your older towers, you can't always get the graphics card to upgrade that will allow you to run an LCD.
If you ought to be able to. A lot of G4 towers only had what they call a VGA card, which is the analog sort.
Uh-huh.
You can retroactively fit a DVI card in, which is a digital video interface.
Okay, but Apple tells me that you have to get a new graphics card too.
That's what it would be.
Yes.
The AGP. So that's what you're talking about.
It's not necessarily that it has to be an AGP card. Your machine has to be able to take an AGP card. That's just the interface between the card and the computer, how it plugs in.
Yeah.
But what's the more important thing is you need a video card adapter or a video card with the digital output, the DVI
even
output.
Even though the highest card available for a G4 tower is only going to give you 64 megabytes of
You're up against that constraint if that's the limit that exists.
Yeah.
That if it has the digital video output, you will get digital rendering of what the operating system does.
Uh-huh.
The limitations on the memory will control the color depth and the amount of resolution on the screen.
Yeah, that's what
but
I was thinking.
But it won't control the color rendering. That will be under the control of the operating system.
So if you were to try to find a CRT that was the old Apple CRT, gray and white, you know.
Yeah.
I think they were built in 1999. But how long is their lifespan for those guys?
Until they go...
Well, what'll happen is there's a degradation they go through, and I've got an old Rastrops monitor, which used to be the brand, and there was also a gentleman in town by the name of Rick Barbazat that used to refurbish monitors, right?
Yeah.
Because of this whole LCD business, and the fact is that the CRT phosphor degrades with time, and eventually the colors become washed out, and the image kind of smears and the colors don't register properly.
Right.
So CRTs are going the way of, I hate to say it, LPs and stuff steadily.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a graphic designer, so if there's anyone out there that hears this question, which is a good one, which is, yeah, how do LCDs compare to CRTs?
Well, I have one last question. I did locate a CRT that is the original Apple monitor that's, mm-hmm, the gray and white, just like the G4 Tower.
Right.
And the gentleman tells me that Rick, when he was still in business,
right,
that he bought it from him,
mm-hmm,
quite a few years ago. So on the back of the machine, it clearly shows that it was manufactured in 1999.
Right.
It's missing in the middle row of its VGA plug. It's missing number 2 pin. And the Apple Store tells me that the pin should be there.
Some pins don't matter. I don't know whether... Now, that's esoteric. Is number 2 needed? Does it work?
Right. Well, yeah, but it's like a Trinitron where it's got 3 lines going across the screen at the top, middle, and bottom.
That's normal.
That is normal.
Yes, it is. If you look real closely, this is very esoteric stuff. If you have a very fancy pants Trinitron monitor, there is a vertical grid of wires, and they're held in place by a matrix across the middle of the screen.
Well, I'm aware of that, but
right,
I was not aware and thought, on the contrary, that the Apple CRT was not a Trinitron.
They made a whole bunch that were Trinitron, and the brand name Trinitron went out of use as the patent ran out a few years ago. Patent, excuse me.
I see.
Ran out a few years ago, and it got taken over by another name, so other than Sony could make it, but it still uses that technology of a grid of wires held in.
Even though this is a 1999 Apple monitor, you think that the Trinitron was available to them at that time?
Yes. They made CRTs with, okay, the Trinitron picture tube inside, which very characteristically has that very fine gray line in the middle.
Okay.
And the way you can be sure it's not something the video card is doing,
yeah,
is by either plugging it into something else or trying to get what they call a white raster, which is you unplug it from anything and just make the screen come up.
Okay, so you unplug the monitor into the wall, because it doesn't have the monitor cord, power cord. I mean, it has the VGA cord that goes from the monitor to the computer tower.
If you unplug that, if you're in luck, the screen will remain with a white raster on it. So you'll know that any artifacts aren't caused by the computer.
Okay, so it should be an all-white screen then.
It could be.
Uh-huh.
And there's sometimes a setting on the front where you can bring up a white raster to look at it.
Uh-huh.
My guess is that the phosphor on the monitor needs to be recalibrated, which is something that Rick used to do.
Uh-huh.
That's separate from gamma correction.
Now,
right,
let me ask you this. What is the memory size on the card that you have, the video adapter you have in your computer now?
Well, I've got the AGP 128 megabyte, but they say that I have to replace that card with a radon, anti-radon card that's only going to have 64 megabytes.
There's no such thing as a 128 DVI card for this machine. Is that what's being said?
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
Okay.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, probably in reality, and you know, the 64 megabytes, unless you're running something that is doing a lot of 3D rendering or games where you need to refresh very rapidly,
yeah,
the 64 megabytes will probably be quite adequate.
That would cover 1600 by 1200 by 32,000 colors probably. Does that sound right to you?
Yes.
Yeah, because I do a lot of photographic retouching, and some of my individual files would be 100 megabyte files.
It's not so much that as the color depth that's in use.
Uh-huh.
Right, it's the resolution, color depth, and the speed with which you want to do it. So if you're doing 3D work and you want to render it and turn the thing, or computer...
Yeah, it's not 3D for me,
right,
but occasionally video, Final Cut.
Then the speed at which it can render the frames may be affected.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So what I was going to suggest is, considering a 1999 CRT that is degraded over the years, as they will do. And considering the new technology in LCDs, I know ViewSonic makes a very nice 17 or 19 inch either VGA or DVI LCD for an excellent price. You might be better off switching, and I would suggest wherever you buy the components, make sure that they have a 15 or 30 day return policy with no penalty of any sort, and give it a try.
Uh-huh. And just see if the LCD might work better for
right.
me.
Right.
What happens? Change out the card so I can run an LCD.
It yeah. seems very subjective, but the LCDs are sold with a contrast ratio, which means the difference between light and dark.
Right.
Basically, the more you pay, the faster it will refresh, and the bigger the difference between light and dark, and the bigger the absolute amount of light it will give out.
Yeah, but isn't it also true that when you get into the really high contrast, the gamut is limited? It's not that full gamut, and you start to lose, you know, your different shades of gray, you know.
Now you're talking the graphical stuff, with which I'll admit I have very limited
yeah.
familiarity.
That's where the LCDs have always fallen short in the past, and I've always been asking my Sierra College professors in my graphic design classes,
mm-hmm.
you know, I up until January of this year, I've inquired, well, have the LCDs come up to par yet, or do we still stick to CRTs? And at no point did any of my instructors inform me that all these businesses were going out of business and not doing CRTs anymore.
Right.
Well, and in this case, I'd suggest try it if you can.
Uh-huh.
And see for yourself.
I guess the word you're looking for is what they call an audio dynamic range, which is its ability to represent a large variety of different colors and shades.
Well, a full gamut. See, the CRTs always represented a full gamut. And the LCDs have always been shy on that.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the fact that the light changes from the middle to the edges to up to 25%, and I've spent about 2 months researching this on the web.
That I must admit I had not heard of,
yeah.
and I'm not sure why that would be true, because it's not driven by an electron beam. It's each cell is driven in a grid, and each gets an equal current.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure about that one. I'm not saying you're wrong.
It's it's just a matter of time for the technology to improve to address color accuracy. What it's doing and has been doing for a while now is just addressing speed and people for 3D, but we graphics people are being left behind.
Well, you know, it reminds me of the old argument of do you want to use vacuum tubes for your amplifier,
right.
or do you want to use solid state?
You know what? Roger had a good point there, which is it's not so much the array of transistors on the screen. He mentioned the backlight could affect the distribution of light on the screen.
Yeah.
Say something about that, Roger.
Well yeah, the basically the LCD just passes a light, you know, it's like a switch that switches on the light, and the actual illumination comes from behind.
Uh-huh.
And getting a constant backlight across the whole of the screen is quite tough. And it's normally the backlight that fails on the LCD display when they finally go.
Yeah, I see. Okay, any recommendations for LCDs that are calibrating up? Are you okay?
Apple's going to make it and you're going to pay. I think that's,
yeah.
that's got to be.
I think Glenn mentioned ViewSonic, and you know, they make yeah. some really nice ones. Try it. You know, do you have a Pantone calibrator?
No, I don't.
You really should get one if graphics work, because even your CRT is totally uncalibrated. I mean, it's you know, it has nothing, it has no.
Well, I've kind of gotten around that by Pantone color cards that you can pull off the internet.
Right, but Pantone makes it for $80.
And the color meter, you know, the measuring device,
right.
and with Apple, kind of lets you get around that to some degree. But
if just $80, you'll get a color Pantone calibrator. You hang it on your CRT or your LCD, do a full calibration, and you're calibrated to Pantone colors.
Yeah, but that's not $80. You're talking $299.
Roger's got a source.
No, you go to Amazon and have a look around. They're $80,
really?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So these are pre-printed color swatches.
No. It's a photo light sensor that you have.
Well, you stick it on the screen.
You stick it on the screen.
I've seen them in the paint store.
And it goes through the software with all of the different.
Yeah, I've seen them in the paint store.
Yeah,
I've
looked for a while. I've been keeping an eye. I mean, occasionally I see the Pantone Spider 2 Pro go
right.
on sale for $199, but I've never seen it for $90.
What's the brand name of what you've got, Roger?
It's the Pantone Spider 2.
Yes, but there's a Spider 2 and a Spider 2 Pro, the difference being that the Pro will allow you to calibrate, so what you see on screen is what gets printed out.
That is correct.
You know,
it calibrates your printer, not the printing Okay. But anyway, yeah, so yeah. Try that and have a look around, do a search, $80, and that'll be money well spent.
And is there anybody around town that is still repairing CRTs?
Not anymore, not if they've got any. Well, they might work down at the transfer station, I don't know. I'm afraid they're going out.
No, they recycle them, though.
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't know anyone that does it anymore.
Thanks so much, you guys.
Oh, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. And let's go to our next call, who's been waiting for quite a while, and then Dennis is here in the studio. Oh, you just want
to
listen in? Okay.
Nice
I call
it
your live on the air. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Comment, I got an email that AVG is discontinuing its free antivirus in January. I hope that was not a hoax.
No, what they actually said, if I got the same one, and it said that they're discontinuing support of the version 7.1 in January, and you need to upgrade to the version 7.5.
Okay.
And if you were listening earlier, I did describe how to do that.
Okay.
And we'll have that in our show notes, and I'll have it under grisoft.com, the news version 7.5. And Roger did let us know that it has an install or repair button, but it doesn't have an upgrade button. Choose repair, and it will upgrade it.
Okay. When I'm trying to download Google Earth, it says you need a broadband. When they say things like that and you have dial-up, if you went ahead and downloaded it, would you just get the dial-up slowness and not worry about it, or are you just kaput?
What would happen is, what would happen with Google Earth is it's pulling maps of the world down, and if you want to have a look at Grass Valley, you can probably... It would be easier and quicker to get your own helicopter and fly around the area.
Right. Okay. Quicker is the term there. It's okay. Like, how long do you want to wait with dial-up?
Okay. when you're cleaning the fan, do you really take the case apart to do that?
Not necessarily apart. You have to take the side off. Depending on how old your computer is, the whole case cover slips off, or you can just take one side off if it's a little bit newer.
Okay.
And what I do, and guys, tell me if this is not the right way to go. I take a little soft paintbrush and a vacuum, and I go and like brush and vacuum because I want to get that out rather than...
Some of it's stuck, yeah.
If you do that, I would recommend that you wear a wrist strap. That's all.
Okay.
Oh. Because of the static. The argument is between vacuum and blowing is the static, and if you use a brush, you're even more likely to get static. So
hadn't thought about that, and I haven't had that problem, but thank you for bringing that
up.
The
clue here is actually, and it's a bit confusing, that the machine should remain plugged in, but should be turned off. Now, that sounds kind of weird, but the idea is you don't want juice going through the machine.
But you want it grounded.
But you don't want it grounded, and it is grounded if it's connected to a power strip, but the power strip's power is turned off. And then you hold on to the case with one hand.
Oh. Exactly.
But that's a sort of driving habit that most of us have got, and I sometimes forget and I go, I wonder how many dollars worth of damage I've done now. But that's the brakes.
But for those of you that want to invest $8 at Staples for a wrist strap, you just connect it around your wrist and then clip it onto the computer, and you're fine.
Roger, it scares me. It looks like what they use on Florida's death row.
Okay, one last thing that you don't have to deal with today, but maybe on your website, when for a newbie like me, when it says DVD minus or DVD plus, when I go to buy them, the person told me, you need to know what your computer will write to, and it just said read DVD read write, and I found out just now that my owner's manual is already on my computer. I couldn't find it in the
right.
So this is how bad I am. But someday, if you could talk about DVD, what we should buy when
Way.
We can cover that right now.
Oh, good.
What's the cheap way, Paul?
You buy the wrong sort, and if it doesn't work, it's not that.
most computers can handle plus or minus disks, both in the R, which is the recordable, or the RW, the rewritable.
Okay.
Now, it's where you're going to play them that may be the issue.
Oh.
Most TV top DVD players will not look at or read a plus R disc. They want to see the minus R variety. But if you look on your desktop DVD player, it will tell you what it can and cannot read, or what it can read. It won't say what it can read.
I found a great utility out there. I really like the Nero software. If you're lucky enough to have the so-called Nero Easy CD Burner software, there's an option in there that tells you exactly what your discs are and what the drive is. And you try to match that.
So you go to disk information or drive information, and it can tell you. And basically whatever's on sale, I buy. So.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
No other callers, or are there?
Let's see. We've got to go look. We do have a couple more callers.
Can I say something
actually
quick
one more
just before I
certainly,
forget?
Certainly, yeah.
Of all the upgrades we mentioned Internet Explorer 7, and you'll notice nobody wanted to talk about it. we chatted about AVG a little bit, which is very nice and does work. The third thing that's come up, which is a surprise, and in equitability, we should say that once in a while Apple does have trouble. Everyone out there has been happily getting hold of iTunes version 7, and I actually see the culprit out there. It's Mr. Paul Emery, and he got iTunes version 7 with its facility to organize your music in folders on a Mac, and the early versions of iTunes disorganized his music collection. There's no checkbox saying disorganize my music collection, but it turns out to be a bug in early versions of iTunes version 7.0.0. We're now up to 7.0.2.18. If you don't know what that means, it doesn't matter. Just go back to iTunes and re-download. They've gone through four or five patches since 7 came out a month ago, something like that. So disorganize my folders is one of the features you don't want on iTunes. How you get that order back again, I'm not quite sure.
And I'm not going to actually talk much about Internet 7 other than Microsoft is classing it as a critical update. And therefore, it will be tried to be pushed down to your computer as part of the monthly update cycle if you have that switched to automatic. However, they will ask you a question and...
Will it make sense, Roger?
Well, that's... you're absolutely right. It isn't that clear. It's typical Microsoft. But you will see a little question, and if you do not want to upgrade to Internet 7, you do have the choice of unchecking it, and it will not install.
Now, you had some questions to address about whether it fixed multiple bugs in JavaScript and CSS. What was the answer to that? Because I haven't used the darn thing.
No. as a webmaster, I think I speak for most webmasters, we all hate Microsoft Internet Explorer 7. It's just that everybody uses it, and so we have to make our websites work in that buggy piece of software.
Right.
But they haven't fixed the CSS model. There's a lot of the box model. They haven't fixed a lot of the
Is it
bugs.
Different bugs, or it's the same bugs that they've inherited?
No, the same ones. They fixed some, but none of the really important ones.
And you would figure right out of the box it should look good and work well. I downloaded it on a computer last night. And if everybody out there, any program you open, you're going to have, starting in the upper left-hand corner, some basic radio buttons called File, Edit, View, Go, Tools, Bookmarks, Yahoo, Help, all of those. When I opened up Internet 7, there's nothing there.
No,
it's gone. How did I get to Tools? How do I do this? How do I bookmark or favorite something? It's all gone.
Yeah.
And that's pretty basic.
But a little bit like the media player. That happens to me with the media player.
But it empties out.
So not necessarily something that we would recommend right now. And again, do you use Mozilla?
I use Mozilla Firefox in the
main. Okay, and then
We're out with version 2 of that, as I mentioned earlier on. It's not particularly critical anyone upgrade. It's not a security upgrade. It just... logifies? I'm going to make that word up. The government can do it, we can do it. It logifies things.
Paul must have been in marketing.
How about Web 2 then, eh? Anyway, so what happens now is, I won't go into it, but the best thing to do is just try it out. Dennis keeps looking like he wants to say something here. Let's bring him up on there. What you got?
Well, while you're on the subject of Internet Explorer, lately I've noticed that some of my web pages, when I load them, have a little section that says this page did not load.
Oh, part of a frame
that
does that.
Like maybe an advertisement. Now, could my spyware software be blocking those?
It could do, and you'll end up, instead of getting the banner or the ad in there, it'll replace it with that. What it normally does, if you get something like... there's a program out there that will block banners. It will replace it with something else. It's not usual for it to do that.
I use both Spy Doctor and Spy Sweeper on this machine.
It might have done that. What you probably should do in Internet Explorer, which everybody needs to do, is go empty the cache, which is Tools, Internet Options... delete files.
Right.
It gets overloaded in the cache, and it can't then show new content sometimes.
Right. Okay.
And the website itself could be faulty, so it's not sending down the pieces.
I didn't think it was a video problem, but you know, it's kind of bizarre to see that. You know, this page did not load. You know,
you know what it could be. That is that in some websites the banners are delivered into a frame or a portion of the site from a different location than the one that you're at.
Then it could be down.
Yeah, and a good example is. What's the name of that? It's totally escaped me. There's a website out there that delivers banners left, right, and center, AdWords or something like this.
DoubleClick.com.
DoubleClick.net, DoubleClick.com. if that site gets blocked by your anti-banner software, what comes up instead of the banner is nothing at all. It's unreachable. Then you'll get that result.
Right.
So you're not missing anything valuable, I'd guess.
No.
That's it.
Then,
yeah. It's a shame it doesn't put up something better, but that's the reason. Yeah.
Let's go to our next caller. Hi, caller. You're live on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi. I was glad that you brought up the iTunes subject because I was playing on a Toshiba laptop. It's a fairly new one, about 2 months old.
Uh-huh.
And all I was trying to do was take CDs off my shelf and put them into iTunes. And the DV drive on this laptop, you know, it's a DV combo, whatever type of drive, reads them all. And on an older CD that's not completely trashed, but, you know, has been worn some, it'll load like four or five of the songs, and then it'll hang and make little clicking sounds. And so I bailed on some of those CDs, and I grabbed a brand new fresh CD out of the package, and it just dumped them right on there. So it's like it's really touchy about any scratches or anything on these CDs.
There is a... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is that a common problem? I mean, I shouldn't have to have a pristine CD to load music files onto my computer, I don't think.
I don't think it's down to iTunes. What happens is there is some software out there, some of which is better than others, at recovering faulty data off music discs.
Uh-huh.
And the reason is, with a music disc over and above a data disc, a music disc has to remain in sync with what it's playing.
Okay.
So if it has to go back and read three or four times, it'll hesitate in the music playback. There's a setting in some CD ripping software that says recover from errors.
Okay, and error checking or whatever.
Yeah, error checking and recover from error. So not only will it look for data errors as it comes off the disc, but it'll attempt to fix it by doing it not in real time. So you're not trying to play it, you're trying to peel the data off the disc and recover from scratches and damage. But if it can't play it, it's certainly not going to peel it.
Right, so it's not necessarily that the drive is faulty or has problems.
It's a combination of both. Older drives that are faulty will have more trouble with burned discs and old discs than a new drive.
Yeah, this is virtually a new drive. Yeah.
You know what I would do is I'd recommend try this on your desktop, the CDs that aren't loading fully, and just see if a different DVD or CD reader will work. They're so different, and they can be so touchy. Sometimes.
Right, and well, what I did do was go up to my desktop computer and loaded these older CDs right onto my iTunes on that one without any problem.
On a different machine.
On a different machine.
Yeah, and then that's an old drive.
Yeah, on a laptop, the drive is made more like jewelry work or watch work than a desktop machine, so it's more prone to things being sensitive, I would say.
I see. So you don't recommend that I take it back where I bought it and have them give me a new drive?
I would watch the darn thing. I'm kind of thinking,
if you have trouble with anything brand new or pristine, then yes.
Yeah.
But
okay.
And keep an eye on your warranty and make sure that you're within your warranty period. If it's having trouble with older CDs, it just could be a drive-by-drive basis. But thankfully,
okay, so
you can get them on your... Now, does iTunes allow you, once you've downloaded those or transferred those up to your to your desktop, can you now transfer them over to the laptop? Because I don't use iTunes.
Yeah, that's something I could try.
So it's a workaround, right? The other thing to mention is, here is a bug that's not a bug, it's a feature. When you get iTunes version 7, if you have got an Apple iTunes account, it will try to download all the artwork for all the albums you've got, whether or not you bought them from the iTunes store.
Right.
That's a nice feature, but the bug is the very first time you go to iTunes 7, it immediately goes out, and if you're like me, you've got a lot of music in iTunes, it's going to drag the whole bloody lot down.
Right.
And you're not playing music, you're dragging down album artwork, and it hiccups.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Okay, well, I thank you for your advice.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling in. Let's go to our next caller. Hi, caller, you're live on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Well, my question's similar to all the rest. I've noticed that there's, like, I have Nero... player besides the burner, and you know, everybody has the Windows media player or whatever. Whenever you put a disc in there, it seems like they're all fighting over who's going to take control. Is there a way to like disable everyone and do it yourself?
Sure. You can choose one. Let's see what Roger's
answer.
Well,
you know what I've done is there's a window that comes up that asks you what to do, and I'll click do nothing and click the button or the box that says
always do nothing.
Every time, and that same screen comes up every time. It will not go away, but I would like to be able to like manually control the beast.
Well, it should have gone away. If you go into My Computer, so if you double-click My Computer on the desktop, and then you'll see the removable disk section, you'll see your CD or DVD reader, and if you right-click on that, and then left-click on Properties, you'll see some tabs across the top. One of them says Autoplay. And if you click on the autoplay, there's a little drop-down window where you, because Windows tries to identify what is on the CD and then try to match a program for that.
Right, that's the delay, I guess.
Right.
It's like fooling around trying to come up with a solution.
Right.
The problem doesn't exist for me anyway.
So if you go into that tab that says autoplay, and then in the little drop-down box, just select the very first item, and then in the window below, select do nothing, okay?
Uh-huh.
Then you'd go to the next item in the drop-down box, and then select do nothing. Go through all of those. That should fix it.
Fix it, uh-huh.
And the actual is take no action.
Oh, take no action.
With
I'm sorry.
Red slash.
Glenn is keeping me honest here, so that's good.
I have to do that for every drive I have.
For every CD drive you have.
Yeah, on the computer.
Right.
And then for every file type, music, DVD, there's several in there in the little drop-down box.
Uh-huh. Because I always thought there should be a dummy's guide to intermediate Windows.
You'd think there was one ring to control them all, but it doesn't work that way.
You know, if you get really stuck, you can always come to one of our classes. We teach you these things in the Windows XP class.
That
was a plug, by the way.
Sounds simple to do, but it's just a matter of, you know, there's so many directions you can take on all this stuff that gets confusing sometimes.
Okay, we've got 1:55 in the afternoon.
And we want to thank you for calling in, caller.
Thank
Bye-bye
you so
now.
Much.
And we've got a couple of people calling in. We're not going to be able to take those calls. We might be able to get to our last caller here very quickly, so hold on just a second. Want to take a moment to say thank you so very much to Roger Thornburn for coming in.
Well, thank
Again,
you.
Again, the Computer Learning...
The Gold Country Computer Learning Center, gcclc.org.
And the phone number?
273-4961.
That's superb. And before I forget, I should direct people to our website, zen.kvmr.org, for the things we did not talk about today, which are four links to nonpartisan websites that your guide to where the money comes from. Calvoter.org. The Nevada County election site is listed there at zen.kvmr.org. There's Calvoter, and also, oh, I missed the link. There's a link out to research project at UC Chico that talks about the different measures and where they came from. We would like to thank for the past hour of programming, at least in part, enabling our show here on KVMR, OhmSoft Technologies, providing local internet solutions for home and office from Sacramento to Truckee, including DSL, dial-up access, domain name registration, secure transaction services, and technical support on 530-758-0119 or OhmSoft.com. OhmSoft, the enlightened internet solution. Next up's Jimmy Accardi. And what you got for us, Glenn?
Just to remind folks, this is KVMR FM Nevada City, also serving the Truckee Tahoe Donner area on translator K286 AN, Truckee 105.1 FM and 89.5 FM here in the Sierra Nevada foothills. Dennis, thanks for calling in. Roger, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.
We need to have you back, and I want to come over and take some classes from you because I don't know it all.
This guy's got it together.
Okay.
And you know, I got to say, not enough time to do it. Sync back or sync up from two wise guys, or what was
yes, it? Yes, two bright sparks, sync back.
Backup software. We could do a whole show about that.
Oh,
we're going to have to wind
excellent.
It up. Jimmy Carding next. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye now.